Before we start today's episode, I want to give a quick shout out to Zencastr, which is a podcaster's best friend. Trust me when I tell you this, Zencastr is like a Shopify for podcasters. It's all you need to get up and running as a podcaster. And the best thing about Zencastr is that you get so much stuff for free. If you're planning to check out the platform, then please show your support for the Founder Thesis podcast by using this link, zen.ai/founderthesis. That's zen.ai/founderthesis.
Hi, I am Vikas. I'm the founder and CEO of Moving. I'm very excited to be at a podcast with Akshay.
Ek minute ruk jao, ready hone do. Chalo, ye kar lete hain. This could be a great intro.
Every time there is a technology change in an industry, it leads to new giants being born. Walmart was one of the most valuable retail companies in the US for many decades. And today, Amazon is worth more than double of Walmart. We can also see this in the EV space. Tesla is worth more than the legacy auto companies like Ford and GM combined. In India, this same story is currently playing out in the space of electric mobility. And I'm pretty sure that one of the winners after this period of disruption would be a company called Moving. That's M-O-E-V-I-N-G. And as you can guess from the name, this is an EV company. Moving is building an EV mobility platform that combines all the pieces of the puzzle, from vehicle to financing to driver training to charging infrastructure using a layer of technology. And the man behind Moving's disruptive approach is Vikash Mishra, a veteran in the EV space who started Moving with a mission to support the transition to sustainability in the logistics industry. Listen on to Vikash telling Akshay Dutt about the ambitious platform approach of Moving.
Well, since I studied in Delhi, actually, we're very used to walk in the campus, green air, the whole green campus, clean air, breathing. When I moved to Gurgaon, I had to ensure that my kids wear masks while going to school. And this was not the same Delhi NCR that I used to study way back in 2000. So I realized maybe I want to do something about it, because this is a problem that everyone is grappling with. And I decided to call it quits in the oil and gas sector. And then I thought, okay, what is the new sector I want to be? I definitely was very clear that I want to be part of the EV sector, a clean sector. An electric vehicle was an opportunity for both in terms of whether it is a business opportunity and a sustainable opportunity. So electric vehicle was at the intersection of both the business opportunity and the sustainable opportunity. So that's where I started with Mitra Mobility, an electric bus startup. I set up the electric mobility initiative at Shakti Foundation, working with central government and the Delhi state governments and other state governments on various EV policy measures. And then I joined Lithium for electric car business. And I was the business head for the North and the East, working with various corporates for ensuring that all the employee transport that they do using a clean and electric vehicles. That was going all well till 2020. And I thought, you know, I'm a perfect growth path. The electric vehicle is the future of mobility. And I'm at the perfect level of my career. And this is exactly what I want to do in life. But then this whole COVID-19 happened. And the whole passenger mobility came to a halt. Everyone started working from home. There was no need for people to come to office and withdraw by home. So the whole passenger mobility took a downward hit. At the same time, I also observed that the e-commerce market is growing at an alarming rate. People who never ordered before was ordering, you know, left, right, and center. And people who were used to ordering were increasing their order by 2x, 3x kind of thing. And I realized this will lead to a huge demand of vehicles that is being used in the delivery segment. And there's a huge opportunity that this new demand is met by electric vehicles and not by traditional ICE vehicles. And that's where the concept of Moving was born. And I reached out to all the people that I worked with in my professional career. And I told, this is the vision. I want to accelerate the EV adoption in India. I want to solve it in the ecosystem approach way. I want to solve it slightly differently because this requires a different mindset and different approach. And Oh, surprisingly, actually, that everyone I spoke to, they came and joined me. That time, company was not even in the paper in 2020.
You know, doing a logistics business definitely needs upfront investment, right? Like you need to buy the vehicles and you need to hire the drivers, and only after you start doing the delivery is when you get paid. So you need that working capital. So, you know, how did you like secure the capital to actually launch it?
Yeah, but that's a very good question. So normally, as I told before, all the friends in my IID Delhi campus days came in support of me. I reached out to them. They are in very good roles. They are, some of them have become investment bankers. Some of them have become a founder. Some of them have become a private equity professionals. So they are veteran in this investment circle. So I reached out to a few of them, and everyone, without even seeing my deck, they wrote a check. And immediately, within just a few days, I was able to raise first 5 crores with the company without a pre-revenue. And that gave me the confidence that, you know, that there's a vision that I have. There's a team that's backing the vision. There's a group of investors who are rallying behind me. So that gives me more and more confidence that I'm on the right track. And I'll definitely give my everything that I have in my capacity to make it a grand success.
What was the plan? Like when you must have made a deck before you reached out to your network for the seed round. What was it? Like, what was the focus? What did you, like, you wanted to buy EVs and then do last mile delivery? Was that the plan, or what was it?
No, my plan was that electric vehicle adoption has multiple challenges. So if you have to accelerate the adoption of electric vehicle, you need to solve the ecosystem challenges. And when you talk about ecosystem challenges, you talk about, okay, what is the right kind of product that you have to select from the right OEM? That's number one. Number two, what is the right kind of charging infrastructure solution that you have to build? Third, how do you get the skill sets of trained driver and all? That's number three. And four, how do you solve for financing of electric vehicles? So once you have all these problems, you say, okay, we'll solve all these problems. But when we go to customers who are huge demand appetite to convert to electric vehicles, and I saw a lot many e-commerce players coming and saying openly, be it like Flipkart, be it like Amazon, Big Basket, championing behind the cause of electric mobility. So there's a huge demand. But at the same time, I realized the ecosystem challenges they don't understand, and anyone who, and they cannot solve for it. So we wanted to be a solution provider, a technology-based solutions for all the e-commerce players. And we want to become a one-stop solutions for making them switch from current EV, ICE-based fleet to electric vehicle fleet. And whatever in the backend needs to be solved for, whether it's the right kind of product for the use case, right kind of infrastructure, financing, and these drivers, that we will solve as a moving technology platform. So that was the whole pitch, that we are coming between the demand and the various puzzles of electric vehicle ecosystem. And we will provide the entire ecosystem as a service provider to this e-commerce player. So they don't have to worry about making a switch. We will ensure that it is a seamless switch. Will ensure all the SLAs that is applicable for the ICE vehicle is same SLAs for also the electric vehicles. And we give a better experience in terms of making the switch to electric vehicles. That was the pitch. And most of the investors understood that the future of mobility is EV. And if I am coming there as with a plan and with a vision, then with a team, then much more willing to support that vision. It was not it was a very easy thing to raise the fund, the first 5 crores, with a very simple business plan that we want to, we have understood the use case. We know that last mile delivery is a huge demand potential. We know that it is very much cost competitive, and we knew that the whatever product is available in the market in that 2-wheeler and 3-wheeler segment is appropriate for adoption of EV in the segment. So that was the whole story that we brought to the investors. And most of them got it. Most of them, they wrote check and supported the vision. And also they were rallying behind me as an individual. That plan is everyone can make, but I think who was the man behind the plan this day supported me. So I also felt first time huge responsibility on my shoulder to make it happen. But, you know, here, you know, people are writing a check behind you, whatever small note they are writing, but there's a huge expectation on you. And you have to meet the expectation. So you go with twice the energy, twice the enthusiasm, twice the excitement to make it happen. And that's where the entire team worked very hard for a 1 year period. And the last 1 year, we have gained the reputation of being the number one EV service provider brand in the country. So that's a payback we have given to investors in the last 1 year.
So now you're saying that you wanted to solve these four challenges. Let's talk about all four of those: vehicle, charging, driver, and financing. I'm assuming that these four challenges you would solve so that you can run an EV logistics company, right? You're not like just providing like a tech product, but you're providing a service.
Correct. See, tech is an enabler for us. We see also one thing you understand is electric energy transition is a big thing that's happening in the world. And it's not just having a platform will solve today. Technology will always enable to scale and make it more efficient, but it will not be a solution in itself. So ultimately, hundreds of billions of dollars of oil and gas assets has to be converted into assets of solar panel to wind farm to electric vehicle to the charging infrastructure. That's the transition we are seeing. So I always believe that it cannot be an asset-free mechanism. It's not only app-based business. So it's a hardcore business. That's why people I got in my team who has run the electric vehicle for 100 million electric kilometers before, who understand the technology roadmap, who understand the business tech, who understand the B2B. So I got a very experienced team with me because it was a big thing to move. It's not an easy thing to. So and customer doesn't want to see only one piecemeal solution. The customer wants to see, I want to outsource all my headache to you.
Yeah. They want like a, they just want to switch the vendor, but not change anything else major, you know.
Which product, you know, where charging infra, what financing, they can't financing. That's all the product piece, right? There are, if you look at, I'll say in terms of in typical ICE vehicle, you can go to, you can name three companies and you can go and buy a product. You can go to Bajaj, you can go to Hero, you can go, you know, TVS. Between 3-4 brands, you will know which one to buy. Similarly for 3+, between 3-4 brands, Atul, Bajaj, Piaggio, you will know which one to buy. In EV space, you have almost 40-50 OEMs, and every week you will see new OEM coming in the market. Now, how do you filter these OEMs who are going to give you a better product, match with the better service, and match with the long-term commitment to ensure supply of the electric vehicle? So that the selection is our IP. So whenever we do a vehicle, we do a thorough testing of multiple conditions, multiple cities, multiple climatic conditions before we say yes to onboard a vehicle. So far, we've only onboarded 3 vehicles on our platform, 3-wheeler, and only 3 or 4 vehicles in our 2-wheeler platform. So we are very conscious about making the first decision right, because if you get the product strategy right, then everything else that you will do will fit anyway. So that was number one.
So by choosing the right product, it saves you from maintenance hassles and downtime. Like all of those things don't come, and it runs cheaper, because if there's no downtime, if there's no maintenance, then it will be more productive.
Absolutely. If you have, see, how does the vehicle make money? Vehicle makes money by running number of kilometers in a month, but also number of days in a month. That's what uptime is all about. So if your vehicle is performing as it was supposed to perform day after day and kilometer after kilometer, that is a good product. And if something goes wrong, if the OEM is backing you up and providing you a world-class service to ensure that they feel the same pain as you are feeling the pain about the downtime, then you have the right partner OEM to work with. So those are the guides, right? So that strategy has worked very much for advantage.
Which OEMs did you select?
I selected, they also launched in January, February, which led to Alti Green. There's a Bangalore-based company. And then we have selected Euler Vehicles, which is a Delhi-based company.
Okay. So manufacture in India, or do they import from China?
Piaggio manufactures, Alti Green manufactures vehicle in Bangalore. And Euler manufactures vehicle in Faridabad, Delhi NCR. So they will manufacture. But of course, there are elements of electric vehicle, be it in terms of cell and also in terms of electronics, semiconductors. That component still has to be imported, but that's true for many automotive industry in general. So there's a certain degree of localization that you can achieve by manufacturing in India, but of course, there are certain percentages that you cannot do with the current manufacturing setup. So there's a partly dependency on import still is there in the sector, right? So those are the vehicles we onboarded. And then there was the first problem we solved by getting the right product for the customer. And that was a very huge thing, because then customers started trusting our judgment on advising them on choosing the right product for the use case. And in exchange, we've also started educating customers about paying the different commercials for the different vehicle segment that we are offering the same form factor. So in three-wheeler for Piaggio vehicle, which are different commercial. In three-wheeler for ordinary vehicles, which are different commercial. And we always explain that in a very transparent way, and why we are doing what we are doing and what is the advantage that you are going to achieve. Neither we want to oversell you a product that can be done by a cheaper vehicle. Neither I want you to force with a solution, a cheaper solution, which will not meet your use case requirement. So in that case, the customer started trusting us as a thought leader in the industry, that we know that we are talking sense, and we have a firm belief that we want to overall have a good EV experience with you. So customer started liking about the product selection strategy. And then number two was about the charging infra. Right? Charging infra is the case that people say, okay, how can you rely on other CPOs, let them build, why you want to do build and all. So we realize, you know, the CPOs, there are so many CPOs in the country. You know, every day you'll see one more charging company coming up or showing up here. But I think that if you ask them, what is your gut feel? What do you believe? Why you are in the sector? You know, what is the location strategy? What is your location intelligence? What is the right hardware? What is the right software? What's technology? Completely lacking the understanding. Even the biggies, everyone is crafting their own narrative. Someone is saying battery swapping, someone is saying fast charging, someone is saying slow charging. We say, I don't know. We have taken a view that we will be a technology agnostic company in terms of charging infra. Which means, if the fast charging is going to work for our vehicle and for our customer, we'll deploy fast charging solutions. If battery swapping is working for our customers for the use case, we'll go for battery swapping. If it's the slow charging, we'll go for slow charging. So we have taken a technology agnostic approach, and we have not married to any solution on the charging part. That's number one. That's a key reason. Number two, we want to location. We want to ensure that the problem in India actually is that most of the charge, if you'll hear two things. One will say, oh, there's no charging infra. But wherever there's a charging infra, you will say the utilization is about 5%. So once you have it, have a low utilization, but then also you complain that you don't have it. So we wanted to solve this problem in one shot. We'd say we'll only create at location where we see the demand happening here and now. So let's say we'll do a mapping of a geospatial mapping of entire city. And we will see which location warehouse is located. Because they are my current customers also, and they are my potential customers also. So that location intelligence gave me the idea where to set up the charging infra, where from one single charging hub within the 3 to 5 kilometer radius, I will be able to meet the requirements of multiple customers. So that was the location intelligence. Second, we know what is the kind of vehicle they are asking for. So we already know what kind of charging infra solution we have to provide from a hardware perspective. And we know that we will always be a data and technology driven company. So how do we make it smart charger? How do we collect the data from every charger and bring it to our server and how to use of it? So those will identify that our charge, hence our charging infra is 70 to 80% utilized. None of the CPU's charging infra is 70 to 80% utilized. Number two, now other CPUs have come to us now and say, can we use your charging infra? Because we find that this location that you have set up charging infra is very good. We find that the way you are setting up your hardware and software is very good. So now we started with the delivery business, let's say you are right. But now, because people are liking a charging infra strategy, they are coming up other fleet operators who maybe are competitors also. They are coming us and they are started using our charging infra also. And I'm a firm believer that, I mean, always moving will always be an open ecosystem platform approach, which means it's like a telecom network. You move from Jio to Vodafone to Airtel, it's a seamless switch. Similarly, the way you build a charging infra network should be like a telecom network. You may move from moving charging point to there's a Magenta or with any charging point operators. It should be a seamless switch from a user perspective. And that is the mindset I want other CPOs to also collaborate with us. And some of them have come to us and we are already collaborating and sharing data and information. So that's part of the charging infra strategy that we have solved it. We have solved two things. One, we have solved it's a cost-effective solution. So we only do fit for purpose. And we do always do well. We have 70-80% utilization we see. So that is how we build our network. So because of that, our charging infra itself is a profitable business. It can be a profitable business. If you start charging, let's say moving delivery can be paid to the moving charging business, it will be a profitable business as well.
If you like to hear stories of founders, then we have tons of great stories from entrepreneurs who have built billion-dollar businesses. Just search for the Founder Thesis podcast on any audio streaming app like Spotify, Gaana, Apple Podcasts, and subscribe to the show.
You could have also partnered with a solution provider and told them, set up charging infra for me here and here. Like, why did you decide to build rather than work with the vendor?
We did that. We initially, you know, the moment you do a LinkedIn post, just to say you'll get 10 charging providers in the country in one LinkedIn post. So if I do like a month, if I do two posts, I get 20 charging point providers want to work with moving. But when you give the actual task, okay, this is the location, because we know the location. You know, this is the city, this is the location, this is what we want. They struggle. Then they ask us, no, we can't provide this, but we can give you that. Then I realize that neither they have the financial resource, neither they have the real estate understanding capability, neither they have their own hardware, neither they have their own software. So basically, I think in mindset of the people, it's like a petrol business. The moment you put a tender of petrol business, you will see 100 applications coming for. But I think charging infra is a thought leader leadership business. If you are a thought leader, you understand the sector, you understand the nuances, then only should be in the sector. You should not be just for the sake of fun. And I think most of the companies are coming for the sake of fun. So I tried and we failed. We miserably failed. Except for one or two, we miserably failed. Then I realized none of the people know about it. And I think helping them educate, helping them learn, helping them become aware. So right now, Moving Academy is not a part of the business model. But I think in going future, if I start Moving Academy, then probably then I will charge an enrollment fees for all the CPOs to come and learn from us. But I tried, and I think I'm still open. So we have signed a contract with all the top CPOs in the country. And one or two cases, we are using it also. But I think we are not happy with our ability to scale up with speed. At least the speed we're very comfortable with. One thing I'm very clear, and that I'll never compromise on the speed part of it. So either you match up with my speed, moving speed, or you will be left behind. So somehow we have not been a single player who's been able to match our speed. Because in this last 1 year, I'd say we have set up 20 charging hubs already, which is having about 500 plus charging points. I don't even know any of the CPOs have that kind of network in the country. This year, we have planned to add 80 more. So we become 100 charging hubs. And we are getting more flagship hubs now, the bigger scale, 15,000 square feet kind of thing. And if you're in Bangalore sometime, you should come and visit. It's a state-of-the-art charging infra we are building, which even global peer will appreciate that. You could come there. If you have a Tata Nexon, you can come and charge at our place. If you have an MG Hector, you can charge at place. If you have a simple three-wheeler Piaggio, which vehicle, you can come and charge at our place. If you want to swap your vehicles, you can come and swap at the place. Because the way I have thought, the way we have thought, like it has to be a form factor agnostic. That means two-wheeler, three-wheeler, and four-wheeler can be charged. It's a medium agnostic. It's whether it's a Piaggio vehicle or the Ashok Leyland vehicles or the Tata vehicles will give the same respect to all those vehicles, all those OEMs. And third, I don't understand which technology is going to win, whether it's a fast charging, slow charging, or the battery swapping. So whichever is solutions available now will provide that solution, and time will tell which technology is going to win, and we'll go with the winner. We are also setting up a maintenance and service center. So how, what is the right kind of maintenance service required for electric vehicles? And we are building the whole driver training program, a big center for, because we want our drivers to be trained in the new sector. And that's what we are building.
So tell me something. Is there laptops, mobiles, everything is converging towards USB-C as the charging port? Is there something like that in EVs, like a common charging port template or format, like you have USB-C in laptops and phones?
Yeah. See, there are two kinds of things standardized earlier. So one is in terms of what is the upstream supply that you're coming receiving from the power load kind of thing. So that for a slow charge is the 16 amps plug point. That is standard. For a fast charger, you will have a 30 kilowatt, 50 kilowatt kind of load. So that part is standardized. What happens when, what is the device you're putting up inside your vehicle? That part is not standardized, right? So for example, your iPhone will require a different charger. Your HP laptop, different charger. So that is a multiple charger point. That is that is going to be there. There's a lot of talk going on in terms of standardization and all, but I personally think it's not a big problem because we have been accustomed to use iPhone chargers and HP chargers. So if you are used to that, having a different mobile and different charging points, I think for electric vehicles, we should be comfortable having different charging points for different vehicle types. So I am not a big hung up on the standardization debate.
Okay. Now let's talk about drivers. How did you fix that?
No. So the problem with the drivers is, you know, drivers is used to driving an ICE vehicle, right? They are used to noise and they link noise with speed. So they know how bad the vehicle is making noise. That is how speed they are running. That's number one. Number two, their acceleration is all about consuming more fuel and distance has no meaning. There, you drive 50, you drive 60, doesn't matter. When it comes to electric vehicle, the way you are able to get more range out of the vehicle, it depends upon how you do the speed management. If you run a vehicle at 45 kilometers in the steady state, you are getting better range. Although, the design speed is 60 kilometers per hour. Similarly, if you are not putting a brake and decelerating it, you are also able to regenerate some of the charge that's lost. So all these behaviors require, what is the best way of getting the right from the vehicle is very much driver dependent. Hence, we track a lot of data for drivers in terms of when he put the brake, when he put the acceleration, how much the battery degrade, how much the battery charge fall. And we use the data to, there are two kind of training program. One is, before taking electric vehicle, we train them about the electric vehicle. The why is different, how charging, how to run the, that's one. There's also quite learning by doing kind of thing. So that's where you use a lot of data-driven approach. So look, he was a driver, he got 80 kilometer out of this range because he did XYZ thing. You got 60 kilometer because you did ABC. Hence, if you do XYZ, you can also do ABC. That's the kind of live data-driven training we provide to our drivers. And we feel that is a core differentiation covered compared to reskilling and rebuilding the manpower that's required for the driver thing.
So that's this data, like vehicles come equipped with sensors to capture the data, or is it something you customize?
We customize it. So we have our own hardware device that we provide in each of the vehicle that we operate. Every vehicle then throws standards data to our server. And then we do our own data science team analyzes the data in terms of the student our server. So that's the piece that we add on top of whatever OEM's providing. Otherwise, it's very difficult to get multiple OEMs, some giving two data, some giving no data, and then you can't do anything on your part. So that's something we have a very clear strategy on what is the right telematics hardware. How do we collect all the data? How do we store the data? And what do we make out of data is a very clear strategy of ours.
How did you know that you had to do this? Because this just sounds like something which people would learn through mistakes. Like you bought vehicles and your driver screwed it up and then you realized that nahi ye aise nahi chalega. Is that how you learned it, or did you already know that we need to do this?
Already knew, because see, last 4 or 5 years I have been working in this electric vehicle space, but I'm only one face of the company. But there are like, you know, 100 member team who have also worked in the electric vehicle space. So there are people who have come from telematics company and the data company who have done this telematics solution for a lot many players. But they are part of my team. They are finding the right partner and the right way to do it.
at the last leg, which is financing?
Yeah. Now, financing, we realize that, you know, driver will never be, at this stage, financing the driver is a huge thing because the big boys are not participating in this game. They are saying, okay, we will see when the future of technology will come and then we'll decide what to do. But I think there are not...
What do you mean by big boys? Like the big boys in terms of...
Like HDFC, ICICI, the Shriram Finance, they're like vehicle financing people. Think that, you know, the future is not yet there.
Quick question before we talk about this. Does the driver buy the vehicle or does the company buy the vehicle and give it to the driver?
We want driver to buy the vehicle. But problem is, if you are not sure about the company and the product, how can you ask your driver to go and buy the vehicle? So our modus operandi is first few vehicles we'll buy it on the company's book. We'll get our drivers to run the vehicle for 5-6 months. Once the driver gets comfortable with the vehicle, comfortable with the electric vehicle as a product, and then when they say, I'm ready to become a micro entrepreneur, we help them arrange the financing to become a DC. But till the driver is a life cycle for a driver. But till the time driver wants to become a DCO, he is riding the vehicle which is owned by or leased by a company. Right?
What is DCO?
DCO is like driver come owner model. So basically driver is also the owner of the vehicle. So basically driver then buys the vehicle and we give them assured revenue because we have a back-to-back contract with the e-commerce players. And he gets the confidence that what is the earnability of the vehicle and how much he can save more by moving from driver to become a micro DCO.
So this is like standard industry norm companies don't buy, drivers buy. Like this DCO.
In the typical two-wheeler and three-wheeler space, it's a driver who owns the vehicle. But getting a vehicle finance for a driver for a diesel vehicle and CNG vehicle is easier because they also know which vehicle to buy. OEM also know which vehicle to sell. Financier also know which vehicle to finance. When the moment you come to EV, the driver doesn't know which vehicle to buy. OEM doesn't know which vehicle to get finance, how to get the finance. And the financiers have completely clueless in terms of what vehicles to finance. But that becomes an unsolvable problem. So we come in between and say, okay, I want to buy X from this dealer. You better finance it to us. Let the driver experience it. Once the driver experiences, that I will share the data to the financier also, that he has been working with us for last 6 months, and he has been working with us, and he has been earning a decent income to us. So he also become bankable in that sense. So that is how we graduate the drivers to become a DCO through our platform.
So say Delivery, Ecom Express, typically they don't own any of the vehicles. Their drivers own it.
Correct. So they outsource to transport. So Delivery is a logistics company. Delivery is also our customer. Their transport part is completely outsourced to a provider like us, and we are the partner for electrification. So all the electric vehicle that happens in Delivery, it happens via us.
And when a driver decides to become a DCO, does he then acquire that car which he's been driving, or do you help him get financing for a new car?
New car. See, when you and buy any new thing, will you prefer to buy a home which you are staying on rent? Probably 90% will say, no, I'll buy a new. So that is the option we give the new vehicle to them, to the drivers. It's day one, he is owning the vehicle. Day one, he is renting the vehicle. That is the preference. Howsoever, we are also having a program when the driver says, no, I'm very comfortable with this vehicle now. I've been running this for 1 year. So I would like to repurchase this vehicle only. So what we'll do is, if a typical new vehicle is about 36 months EMI, if the vehicle is already completed 1 year, then we'll only pass on the 24 months EMI to the driver. So he becomes free of the EMI period faster, but he also knows that he's taking a vehicle which he was running anyway for 1 year. So that transparency we bring.
Yeah, okay. And the driver gets a salary or... is it like a pay per kilometer or something like that? Like how is the driver paid? Like when he joins initially?
When he joins initially, we give a assured income to him that if you work for 26 days, for this many working hours, then you will get a fixed component of it, right? On top of that, if you are a performance-based incentive we give, that if you deliver this number of orders, or if you maintain the time and you run the vehicle in a nice way, if you meet the customer's KPI and all, on top of that, we drop it from a more incentive for them. So there's a base level salary. On top of that, there's an incentive that we provide to the drivers. So there's a motivation to be more professional in meeting the requirements of the customers.
Okay. And DCOs, do they get paid something like that?
Yes. No. So DCOs also, what we have done is we have given an assurance. See, what's happening actually in the EV space, in the cost of the capex is higher. A typical single is about 3.7, 3.8 lakhs. The EMI burden is also on the higher side. Unlike Ola and Uber, where a driver doesn't know how much he's going to earn today, we give a fixed daily return on that driver attendance, so that he is able to meet his EMI, he is able to meet his regular charging and parking expenses. On top of that, also, after paying all these things, whatever he is about to save is much more than, at least 20 to 30% more than what he was earning as a driver. That much we assure by giving him a minimum one shift job. Now, beyond that point, if he wants to do more, for example, let's say a day shift is about 8 hours, a day shift. He also wants to do a milk delivery in the morning run, or a vegetable newspaper delivery in the morning run. Then we also give them the option of half a day shift more. In that case, he's already recovered his EMI, he's already covered his charging and parking expenses. So only the incremental operational cost is there. So his earnings increases for the move. The whole motivation that we have and say is that how do we make sustainable mobility back with the sustainable livelihood of a driver? That is what we are aiming for, and that is what we are focusing
on. Okay. And you have NBFC tie-ups to do the funding of the vehicle on behalf correct. Of the driver. Right.
So we have tie-up with all the financial institutions. Earlier, they were financing us. Now, the same partners are also willing to finance our drivers.
Because there is a income guarantee, so therefore...
Correct. Mm. We give them income guarantee, and we also tell them on a monthly basis how many vehicles ran, what was the driver attendance, how was driver performance, what was run. So basically, actually, what we want to solve is a data and technology platform that don't make an impression of any community or any technology on your own. Look at the data, see the data, and based on data, you make your insights. Don't punish the 95% of the driver for 5% of the driver who didn't pay in time. Right? So that's the education we have to do with the financiers.
Okay, got it. Okay, let's talk about the revenue part of the business now. So how do you charge your customers? Is it a per kilometer or a per order, or what is that model like?
Most of our contracts are based on per vehicle, per month kind of contract. Some of the early contracts are on the per order model, but we are also slowly moving in terms of minimum guarantee on the order. So the base level revenue is protected. And on top of that, there's an incentive if you do more orders. So I will say we were having a contract both in terms of fixed revenue per EV per vehicle. Largely for three-wheelers, it is the same way. For two-wheelers, half of them is in the per month fixed contract. Other half of them is more in terms of per order kind of contract. So there's only two modules in the two-wheelers.
Okay. So when a company is taking per vehicle, are these like delivery, these kind of logistics companies who take the whole vehicle, or are these like even Amazon, Flipkart would take?
Both. So Flipkart, Amazon, delivery, all of these players have a fixed requirements of the vehicles, and
then okay. So they plan the route and all of that. Correct. They just take the vehicle from you.
Correct. Vehicle. So we provide the entire service: the vehicle plus driver plus charging infra, whatever is required to run that operations using electric vehicles. We provide that.
Why don't they just do this on their own? Because like a DCO means that they don't need to invest as well. They just need to arrange financing for drivers. So why don't they do this on their own? Why do they outsource to you? Because they are taking care of the route mapping and all of that on their own only.
Think about it, say like a Flipkart will have about 25,000 to 30,000 vehicles. If they start managing and working with 25,000 DCOs, it will become a hell of a task. So rather than becoming an e-commerce company, they'll become a transport company. We come in between as a professional organization and say in the back end, we'll manage everything. If the vehicle doesn't work, we'll replace it. If the driver doesn't work, we'll replace it. So we will take care of the entire SLA of your requirements. You only have to think about paying us on a monthly basis. If that is a better model, or you buy entire 25,000 vehicles, you get the driver, and then you manage the daily hassle of paying the EMI and doing the maintenance, ensuring the uptime, provide the charging infra and all. It's a humongous task. It's a humongous task. And I think in India, it will never be happen that whether this old company will take back all the work that they are doing now in an outsourcing fashion, that they will like to take it back in a fully controlled way.
Okay. So how much do you earn? Obviously, it will be different for a two-wheeler or a three-wheeler, but give me some idea. Like
A typical three-wheeler, depending upon the which vehicle, which OEM, which brand, which range, which battery capacity you're deploying, we make anything between 40,000 to 50,000 rupees per month.
This is the top line.
Some part of it
goes to the driver, some part...
And this is the invoice that we raise. As a moving company, we raise the invoice to the customer, right? Now, whether it's a DCO or it's a vehicle is owned by us, ultimately, that's how the backend will follow. If it's a DCO, then we will just keep our commission and we'll pass the entire amount to the driver. If it's a vehicle owned by us, then we will pay the EMI, we'll pay the driver salary, we'll pay the charging parking expenses, and we'll pay the maintenance expense, and rest becomes a little more. That's how the whole thing was in the three-wheeler space.
Yeah. And bottom line is what, like about 10%, 20%?
So if you remove all the cost of the driver and everything, then it will come somewhere between 10% to 15%, depending upon contracting. A typical two-wheeler will make anywhere between 20,000 to 25,000 per month. And if it's a driver and you pay for all this EMI and everything else, then again, here will be like 10%, 15% margin that you will.
Essentially, it seems to me that this is a supply-driven business. The key driver is supply. If you were to add 1,000 more vehicles in a month, then your turnover would automatically be 1,000 into that X number that you're earning per vehicle. Like, the only constraint is how fast you can increase supply.
Correct.
Demand is there for the taking. There's no...
That's the beauty of this in this sector, Anshin, that any amount of time, the contract that we have signed is, and the vehicles that we have committed, is 25 times more than the vehicles that we have committed. So what is the best? You cannot ask for anything better than this. But then, at the same time, we don't want to ensure supply of cheap, underrated vehicles to them. Then you lose the confidence in electric vehicle as a sector from the customers. So we want to provide a solution that is matching the expectations of the customers, that is matching the experience of the ICE vehicle. At the same time,
how many EVs are you adding every month right now?
So right now we are at this phase where we are adding about 150-200 vehicles per month.
Okay.
But we would like to increase it to 500 and eventually to 1,000 vehicles per month kind of department.
And what is your current size, total number of
vehicles? Right now we have about 750 fleets, out of which 450 is about two-wheeler and 300 is about three-wheeler.
So currently, the way I see it, your two challenges are, one is that 30 lakhs for every 30 vehicles, how to bring that number down, or how to make the number of vehicles higher, like 30 lakhs for 100 vehicles instead of 30 lakhs for 30 vehicles. And second is how to increase from 150 per month to 500 per month. So what is the solution? Is the solution more money, or what is it like?
No, we have part of those concerns. First 6 months were a difficult period when no one believed in us, and we didn't have numbers to show. Now we have numbers to show. We have customer contract. We have financial. I think it's ability of the top selected OEM that we have selected. Their ability to supply those vehicles to us on a monthly basis, that is where the challenge is.
Okay. They're not able to meet your demand right now.
Correct. So that the moment you have a COVID situation, something happens, the whole global supply chain disrupts. And then one is dependent on the other. And let's say that there was a 4 weeks of lead time. Now it will take another 8 weeks of lead time. So that's where the whole planning becomes bad. That's why In this year, at least starting of the year, I have given a firm demand to all the OEMs for the entire year. In fact, we have given them order and visibility till 31st March of 2023. So that they can plan in advance in terms of what is the number of vehicle that parts, battery, motor that they have to buy to suppliers. So that is something that I'm hoping that this year it will be much better supply situation. But I will be more confident when I see things happening on the ground.
So you're planning to buy what, about 5,000-6,000 vehicles in the next 1 year?
3 years. So 2,500, we have given the order of 2,500 vehicles to Piaggio. We have given the 1,500 vehicles order to Alticlean. We have given 1,000 vehicles order to Euler. That's on the 3 million. We are talking to a very elite, respectable OEM in the four-wheel sector. We have signed an MOU of 1,000 four-wheelers whenever it's out in April or May when it's out. We have signed an MOU for 1,000 electric vehicles, four-wheeler truck from the leading OEM. And then I think roughly about 5,000 will be also with two-wheelers. That's how we see it. My guess is that we should be very close to 10,000 vans by 31st March 2023. As all the supply I'm talking about actually happens. But I don't see a problem with the demand side.
This four-wheeler would be like the Maruti Omni kind of a four-wheeler that's typically used in 2026.
It would be like a bigger version of Tata Ace thing, or was it like you know, somewhere between 1 to 2 ton category four-wheeler. So not more like a good segment. That is what we are targeting.
Something that can be used for delivering washing machines or refrigerators.
Yes. And of course, use case increases, right? So right now, where I'm struggling is that how do I meet the need of ITC and HUL? How do I meet the need of IKEA? The need of large segment, the e-commerce segment like TV, fridge and all. That is, we don't have the solution yet. But I think by having this kind of product in our portfolio, we'll be able to increase the use case of the same customers in the big.
Okay. Right. So all of these consumer product companies are also potential customers for you, be it FMCG or white good companies, or even say a mobile phone company would also need.
Definitely. The moment you have a full solution support, it opens a huge opportunity. A number of currently in the four segment today, the demand of four-wheeler is 7 times of three-wheeler. Right? So if you see the consumer we're facing in the three-wheeler market, if you go to four-wheeler market, when we're requiring not 500,000 vehicles per month, we'll require much more volume of that. And then the whole supply story has to be much more stitched up. So let's see what happens. I mean, that's the part I am not very confident about, actually, in India.
Finding a supplier, like...
So finding a good supplier of a good product with a very good after-sales service and a network where they can work with us in 30 cities in India. That is the part, is the only thing that I'm losing my sleep on.
Yeah, like you told me, it costs you an extra expense of 30 lakhs for every 30 vehicles you add. So how do you plan to optimize that?
Good. So a large part of that cost in the lease security deposit. So it's not like an actual expense, but it's more like a capital lock-in, which is refundable.
Okay. For the charging station.
Yeah, because in Bangalore, you have a 10 months of, so we are negotiated to bring that 10 months to, you know, 3 months and 6 months kind of stuff. That's a huge, 1/3 of the cost is that. And if you can reduce by 1/3, that's one part of it. Right? Second part is that we've also learned in terms of the hardware cost. Earlier, we used to give order of 10 lots, 10 chargers, 5 chargers. Just now in this break time, I approved 200 chargers right now. So we have scaling up and we already see a 10% cost coming down by using from scale. So rather than doing a one charge, we do a pan-India kind of tie-up and we supply. So that's the second, we are usually 10%. And then we are also taking, we have not yet applied for the subsidy. There's a 10 lakh of subsidy you get for every charging hub you make for public use. Since we are allowing our charging hub to be used for any public, if you get 10 lakh subsidy, you can further reduce. So I'm pretty confident if I do all three measures there, we can reduce that by easily by 50 to 60%.
What about serving more vehicles per charging point or charging center? Like,
That is easy, because what is happening is right now all our vehicles, so this 30 charging vehicles are being charged at the same time, right? So that means after largely these vehicles are used for in the daytime for delivery, and the nighttime it's used for charging. Now in the daytime, the entire charging hub stays empty. So that's why we are tying up with battery swapping centers, because battery swapping centers people use in the daytime. So we are able to recover cost from battery swapping centers. So what we'll do is, while our cost per square feet in the capex part will still be in a per square feet fixed cost, our revenue will be always in terms of measure, in terms of number of units you are able to push in the 24 hours period, right? So the night part, we already have solved it. We had to solve for day part, and that's why we are tying up with battery swapping centers and the fast charging people to give that daytime solution also. So once you have nighttime, daytime, all operating the charging cab 24/7 operations, then you will be able to push more number of kilowatt hour into the vehicle from the same charging hub, and hence your revenue will be much higher that way. So I'm pretty confident we can reduce the cost capex part, and we can increase the revenue by providing all the solution.
Mm-hmm. Plus, by opening it up to public again, that's like daytime utilization.
Correct. So we'll convert more of all our charging hubs or start locations to open to public. We are just working on the app now. Our version of app should be ready by end of March. So at that time, it'll be already almost 1,000 charging points will be live with smart chargers, all available on our app and also through our partner app also. So whether you use other people app or our app, you are able to use our charging intro.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay. So the app is needed to book and pay too?
Correct.
Or to check availability? Okay.
End to end. Whether it vehicle's available, which available, then book the slot. Once you book the slot, you come and do the charge of the vehicle. And after doing the charge, you pay for the vehicle. Right? So the end to end process is all happened through the app. So that's something that is a work in progress. In parallel, we are building the charging points anyway, which we are using for captive use. So while the technology development is happening in parallel, we are building the network day by day and week by week and month by month.
Okay. Tell me about the space now. Let's like zoom back a little. So who are the other players who are also doing this EV-focused logistics service?
So there are many players who have been a strong player in the ICE vehicle logistics player. And they also want to do EV, so that I'll categorize them as whether it's a Mahindra Logistics, whether it's a Nest Transport, whether it's a Kogos. They have traditionally been ICE-based player, and now they are also converting some of the fleets to electric vehicle. Then there are pure play EV players who have only EV fleet. They only provide EV as a service. It's more like a Zip, Zingo, Smarty, those from there. Lightning Logistics is there. So there are players also like that who only do EV. So both kind of competition is there in this space.
These only EV players, do they do all? Two-wheeler, three-wheeler, four-wheeler?
Mahindra Logistics, I think Zip focuses more towards two-wheeler than only in NCR. Lightning Logistics does largely two-wheeler, largely in South focus. Our philosophy has been we will do all form factors, whether it's a two-wheeler, three-wheeler or four-wheeler. And we'll also do with Pan India kind of thing. So we will not be positioning ourselves as a North player or the South player or the West player. We are a Pan India player. And wherever customer wants us to grow and expand with them, we are willing to go and expand with them. So that's been our positioning segment.
And I think none of these other EV logistics startups are building their own charging infra. They would be using charging service providers.
They are using charging providers. They are coming to us also for using the charging providers. But even if they are building it, they are always thinking from a captive perspective. What is my requirement? And our thinking is more from a what is the network requirement. So let's say if this is the place where all the warehouses are there, then whether it's a moving or any other providers, they have to provide this kind of services.
So you're essentially doing more full stack approach.
That is the only way going to work, say that. Unless you take a full stack approach, unless you take a ecosystem approach, you are not going to win this EV play. Because there are many play in the EV ecosystem, right? There's an OEM play, there's a charging play, there's a technology play, there's a service play. But the moment you do an element of it and say, I'll only do a charging play, for a long period of time, the path to profitability will always be a question mark. If you say, I will only do delivery, I will outsource all the driver problem, I will also solve the manpower problem, I will also solve the chat problem, you will never make money in delivery business. So you have to look at the problem in totality. You have to offer the solution in totality to that customer. And that's why how we are thinking about it.
Okay. So like you have about 750 vehicles in your fleet. How does that compare to other players? The top players have what kind of numbers?
I'll give you the other way of thinking it. We are the number one buyer of Piaggio electric vehicle in the goods segment. So we are the number one customers of all the volumes that they have sold. We have procured about 25-30% of the vehicle at the Pan India level. Number two supplies AltiGreen. We are like 30%-40% purchaser of that overall product they have sold. Oiler, we are almost like 50%. So of the products that we have decided to onboard and we have decided to put on our, we are the number one in the segment. But when it comes to actual number, you know, Zip has been there for the last 4 years and they are largely two-wheeler focus. So with actual count perspective, I think they will be on the higher side than us. If I look from
by the end of next year, like based on your plans, I think you would like probably beat everyone else.
We will beat in terms of revenue and profitability for sure. Other metrics, so I for me, vehicle is just a notional figure to achieve a revenue target. It is not an end in itself. So if even the composition of the fleet becomes very important, what is the percentage of two-wheeler, three-wheeler, and four-wheeler segment? And then accordingly, your revenue number will become what was stable and all. So that's why for me, we want to be number one player from a revenue perspective and a profit perspective. That will be for sure. I think because I, for all the customers that we serve, we are their number. So at one way of looking things is from an OEM perspective. Brands that we deploy, we are a number one customer for them. For all our customers, be it Flipkart, be it BigBasket, be it Udaan, be it Reliance, we are the number one EV provider for them, right? So both from a demand perspective and a supply perspective, you can correlate and say we are the number one player from the industry. Now, if you are, that means I'm only talking about, I have preferably chosen only the OEMs that we are working with, and I have preferably chosen only those brands as a customer that we work with. The other way to look at it is if you're not working with the top OEMs, if you're not working with the top suppliers, do I even consider them as a competition or not? So that's how I see it. Like, why we are number one? That's the reason why we are number one.
Say a couple of years down the line, what do you think your revenue mix will be? Because when source of revenue is, of course, what the e-commerce and other companies give you for logistics service. But then you would also be getting revenue from the charging stations, right? So what do you think you'd be looking at your revenue mix as?
In financial year 2025-26, we will have a revenue of $1 billion. That revenue will come from four business. One is a delivery business. And that will be large part of the revenue because that's a customer willingness to pay and customer volume is the highest. That's one. Charging business is our enabler business for us that we will do it anyway. But rather than becoming a cost center, we want to make it a profit center. That's number two. So that will be another business for us. Then on third business, we also think about the financing business. I know actually why. Because right now we are doing all for good. We are giving all the leads to the financial companies. We are providing all the collateral services for the financial companies. But there's a hidden intention behind it that ultimately become a payable service. We will start charging those financial companies either the commission fees or the platform fees. So that is the financing thing we will start a business with. And the fourth, which is a platform business, where whether it's an insurance company, whether it's an OEM company, they are helping, we are giving them DCO. So we will give them the commission fees. We are already getting some of the insurance company from them. When you provide a database analysis and insights to OEMs or the financiers, we'll do some kind of that platform fees as well. there's a whole platform fees will also become a part. It will be a huge part of it. But when it comes to marginability, delivery will be the lowest margin but the highest revenue contributor. Platform fees will be the thing but the highest margin contributors. Overall, ecosystem perspective, on a $1 billion with a very good double-digit profitability margin, we want to make this
company. Amazing. Okay. The fintech play sounds pretty interesting to me. Like you could actually become a fintech with pick up funds at say 7, 8, 10% exactly. and then let's start at 15, 16% and run the fintech in-house.
In fact, we are doing that, and I'll tell you actually what we are doing. From 1st of April, we are startup because of startup. You know, both me and Ragan comes with the experience of 20 years plus. Me coming from energy and mobility space, and Ragan Jain, who was my hostel mate, chemical engineering department mate, and the IIT mate, he comes from a private equity background. So between Ragan and we understand the landscape of energy, mobility, and finance in a very good way. And hence, with some of the diesel that we are taking at 1 year of startup is beyond imagination of any other startups. For example, as you do your fintech thing, actually how we are thinking about it. From 1st of April, we are reorganizing the entire organizational structure of the company. So moving will be a platform company. Under the platform company, there will be two subsidiaries. One subsidiary will be a charge co, that is a moving charge. And other company will be a fintech company. FinServe. And within the fintech, we may go for NBFC ourselves. If we don't go for that, and we say that anyway we are having data, anyway we are assuring demand, anyway we are providing all services of financing, what is the value added that facility? Only value that there is offering the capital. Hence, we are creating this organized structure. So when we go to investor, anyone who was interested in the fintech part, that's okay, you become part, you take part in this, in the FinServe one. Similarly, infrastructure play, we are thinking in a very different way. A lot of oil and gas companies, infrastructure companies, they are much more comfortable with the long play in the infrastructure part. They don't mind owning an asset and which you can pay a stable return. So we'll sell that infra part to them and say, you can come and participate and pay that the thing. Whether the platform team is always going to talk, because whether the platform will serve the contract of the e-commerce players.
How much fundraise do you need to do to hit the 1 billion top line which you're planning?
See, our thinking is that we will need $200 to $300 million to build this company in a proper way. But it doesn't have to all come in one way, one time. See, I can easily make it a 5,000 company and make it a profitable company. It's very easy. Well, at a unit economics level, we are profitable today. Today, on a month-on-month basis, we are able to generate enough revenue and enough cash to meet the requirement of all the driver's salary, to pay for all the EMI of the lease vehicles, to pay for all our charging expense and the infra rent, everything.
You're practically break-even.
Exactly. And despite that, we are making some profit also at the operational level to pay for some of the fixed cost on the salary part of the technology team and our team. That's what we have done. If you just continue it, we can make a profitable company by having a 5,000 vehicles. But that's not our vision. Our vision is we are here to be the leader in the EV ecosystem provider. To become the leader, you need to have a significant presence in a city-by-city approach. Hence, we feel that we should be commanding about 30 to 40% market share of this business. Whether it's a business of delivery, or any use case. So delivery is just a use case that we are thinking now. But you know, as air flows, battery prices come down, you will see more use case coming and be ready for the EV adoption. And we have no innovation and so going into new use case. So we are not married to a delivery. We are married to electrification of the use case, right?
Right.
So a lot of capital goes in there. That's the part in terms of vehicle deployment and the infra development part of it. Second part is we only have small tech team. We only have 15 team based out of Bangalore. It is led by Computer Science 2004 batch, IIT, IIM Lucknow Gold Medalist, ex-Meesho, ex-Google, one of the best product managers in the country. She has built the entire product roadmap. We have to support her with 80-member technology team. So a lot of money will go in terms of development of all the data science, machine learning, AI and all. So we want to be a new age company and not become a logistics company. We are not solving the logistics problem because I think logistics problem has been solved by other companies. The problem that we are solving is the electrification problem. How do we accelerate the EV adoption in the country? That is the problem that we are solving. And whatever you need to work upon the solution, we will work upon the solution, right? So that's where we are. So this is one big ecosystem play, and technology is a big enabler. And that's why we are investing. And the reason why we are a loss-making company today, because we are investing a lot in terms of technology development. It takes time, right? And that's why we would be a loss-making company for the next 2-3 years till we achieve that scale and our world technology to develop. All revenue, 4 revenue streams I talked about, is stabilized. And we are able to get good, healthy revenue and good margin. So we definitely want to be a profitable company, but we want to be a profitable company at scale and be the number one leader in the EV space in this ecosystem. That is what we aspire for.
You've raised about $6.5 million so far, right?
No, actually, we have raised about 45 crores of that. So that will be about $5 million.
Okay. And this has been from whom? Like, how did the fundraise happen? By virtue of both of you, the fundraise would not have been so difficult, right?
It has not been difficult. It has not been difficult. I told you the first. So we have done in tranches. We only raised fund when we need it. And we only raised the amount which we actually needed. Because of the confidence that we have that we'll get money. We have access to capital any day we want to access the capital. So we want to also, the way we want to give the equity also in a phase-wise manner. So when we raised round one, which was like pre-revenue, we raised about 5 crores at about pre-money 40 crores. And those were largely from individual friends and families, right? All the people I know in the way, very easy we got it. In July, we raised about 11.2 crores. That was also with largely in family offices. We raised about, at the admission, about 112.5 crores. Money. And then now in November, December, we raised about 25 crores and at a valuation of pre-money of 250 crores. This is also about HNIs and family offices. We have raised, half of money is still with us. So we can easily go for, depending on how fast or slow you want to go, we can pace it down. But I think every quarter we want to raise some money and we will keep increasing our numbers to give belief to the existing customers.
I guess 1 year down the line, you'll need to do one big headline grabbing kind of fundraise, right? Because once the four-wheeler opportunity, you feel confident that yes, four-wheeler supply is reliable, then that would be the only thing that you're waiting for. Once you're confident of that, then you can just press the pedal and go all out.
You're right. So see, in our next 12 to 15 months, we will need about $20 to $25 million. Now, whether we get this $20-$25 million in one go or we get in 2 different tranches or 3 different tranches, I don't know. But that is the capital we'll need to go what we want to achieve. And I'm pretty confident that the interest that I see, especially in foreign investors in the EV space, is huge. They want to work with mature people and who understand the sector and all. That is the confidence they get from us. And only thing that big capital is waiting for is some kind of traction.
That's
something you can't expedite, right? So that's what we are waiting for. They are all in touch with us. We are in touch with them. So I am pretty confident that this sector is very demanding. There are capitals, millions of dollars of capital, which is waiting to enter into the sector. If you can curate a business with an ecosystem approach, with a strong technology foundation, with a really clear path to profitability, I think access to those capital should not be.
Tell me about how you built out a crack team. Like, you have some very great people in your team. How did you do that?
So one thing I've realized in my 20 years of professional journey, the success of any dream and converting that dream to reality is completely dependent on only one thing. And one thing is the strong team. So I have been very selective in choosing the EV 100, like the first 100 members of my team, so that they are capable to take this company to wherever the company wants to grow. Now, some people advise us, if you are too early at stage to grow a company at this space, you need to hire less, take more responsibility yourself. And my idea is that if I am working on the day-to-day issues, then probably I have not done the team building correct. If I am focusing on developing the technology roadmap every day basis, I have not done the job. If I am talking about business development on daily basis, I have not built my team. If I am talking about operations, so every element of this, I think in that way. If I am working and I am overworked, that means my team is under-resourced and understaffed. So our principle has been over-hiring, and we are hiring for the future growth, not like just meeting the current requirements. That's number two. Third, in our network, I have worked in the energy industry just the last 4-5 years, and electric vehicle has been a recent phenomenon. So it's not that if you ask me whether as a McKinsey consultant, was I advising future of mobility is electric vehicle? I was not talking about that because I didn't see that happening. It all started happening from 2015 onwards, and the last 5 years are picking a very fast pace. And luckily, my journey in electric vehicles started in that phase in India only. So everyone who is working in the electric vehicle space in country somehow knows me and I know them. So I know who are the good people, which company. I've been observing them personally in various things. So I have reached out to all of them, and so far I have got 100% traction on all the top leadership part. Whosoever asked to come and join with me, they have all come and joined with me.
Okay. And what about drivers? How do you attract drivers? Because that will become a key challenge, right? If you want to hit that 7,500 number, then how will you get so many drivers?
See, initially we thought that it's a very easy problem to solve. And we signed the contract with all the manpower agencies. And they said they'll provide the driver on time.
Okay. Like team leads and these kind of
companies. Exactly. Gig Force, team leads, better place. When they realize they are completely disconnected with the gig economy. They don't even know what is the real thing that they bother. If you ask any of those players, what is the real thing they bother? They will say more money. But actually, it's not. What they are looking for is a very stable kind of company. Second, what they are looking for is a very consistent kind of company. So as a company principle, we have said every 10th of the month, they will get salary. Like we, all our employees get a salary on a certain date. Every driver of us will get a salary on 10th or one day before, but not on 11th. Second, we will not have any this whole debit system, this penalty, that penalty, and all these things, where a driver never knows how much money he is to make after the month. He can see on the app how much money he is going to make at the end of the month, and he'll get exactly the same amount on 10th of every month.
Complete transparency in calculations,
and complete transparency on timing. Those two has helped. Two factors will work in our favor in terms of attracting the people. And the first drivers that we hired, they have become our champions of saying, oh, this is the company. They don't ask me to work too much of overtime. They give you a certain time every day, same place, based on your home location. So that is something that is working, the word of mouth is working in our favor. And that's how retention, we are able to retain our drivers in a very good way. And also we are able to give them career progressive opportunity by them not only becoming a driver. If they want to become a driver, that's fine. They can have a better work-life balance. But if they want to progress in life and they want to become a driver come owner, we also bring them facilitate to make it happen. Because for me, sustainable mobility has no meaning unless it is backed by a sustainable livelihood of those driver community. In India, unfortunately, a driver is often a very neglected and harassed community. If you go to talk to any, I'm not naming Ola and Uber in such, but I'm saying if you talk to any Ola and Uber driver, you will not find a single happy driver there. They always feel they are cheated. They always feel they are all the payment is non-transparent. And they always feel what company has committed was always an over-commitment and they always under-deliver. Now, I don't want to go into details of what went wrong in there, but it's just the symptoms I'm telling which I get. Because as a part of, I don't drive. So I always take a Uber or Blue Smart, depending on what city I am. And my favorite type part is interviewing the driver.
Yeah.
And that's where I get all the insights on unit economics, what's happening in the industry. All my insights is based on those interviews with the drivers. The impact that I want to create is not only on the environment part, but the impact I want to create is also on the people's life, especially who are downtrodden, especially the lower strata of income. Those are the people I really want to make a difference.
Got it. What is the role of data and machine learning in the business? Like one part, obviously, you told me is to make drivers perform better. What else?
So there are four kind of data that we use. One is on the vehicle productivity part, right? So unless you collect the data on, so we put our own hardware and we collect the vehicle data in terms of speed, location, and a lot of battery data like state of the charge. Now, what typically if you book a Uber, what Uber essentially does is it matches the demand with the supply, right? And that's how the geofencing is done. In our algorithm, the way we want to do the allocation of the trip is based on the supply of the vehicle and the driver, demand location, and the state of the charge of the vehicle. And based on the state of the charge of the vehicle, we want to decide they should go for delivery or should go for charging stations. Unless you have data that comes from the vehicle, you will not be able to do that. So the book operational efficiency becomes a very important part of it. That's the number one part of it. Second part is on the vehicle maintenance part of it, right? Now, vehicle gives a lot of signal, how the battery is degrading, how the is performing and all. And it will give much signals in terms of whether the vehicle is ready for going for vehicle maintenance or not. So that whole maintenance and settling, both preventive and predictive, we want to do through data. That's on the vehicle side. I also talked about in terms of a multi-stakeholder platform where we want to share the data of vehicle and the driver to the financiers, to the insurance, to make sure that we are able to reduce the risk from them. That's a multi-stakeholder part. Third is on the network development. Let's say we applied to 200 vehicles in Delhi NCR. Now, right now, one way of finding the charging for location intelligence is one we have taken is where the demand is, right? For example, if there's an Amazon Flipkart warehouse there, we are going to put a charging for there. But let's say I have a data of what is the trip profile of 2,000 vehicles that is running on the Delhi NCR on a daily basis. And if you map that trip profile, you will say which are the red zone, which are the green zone, which are the orange zone. The red zone is where the vehicle is strong. It would be the maximum block, whether it's going from Delhi to
heat map.
Exactly. So based on the heat map, you decide what is the right place to put the charging. Right? Otherwise, like other CPUs, you blindly find a place and you put a charging infra and say, please Vikas, come and use our charging infra because no one is using. So we want to bring electric vehicle. We want to be a data and technology driven company. Electric vehicle generally throws more data compared to ICE vehicle, the way it is designed. And given that it is linked to a charger, and charger also throws a lot of data in terms of how it's charged, when it's charged and all. So if you combine the real machine learning and AI is, when you combine the data of what's coming from vehicle, what's coming from the charger, and what's coming from the driver. And you, based on that, you can make some decision on what is a driver incentive program that you can design based on how the driver drives the vehicle. How can you schedule a better maintenance of the vehicle based on the data? How can you design the algorithm and optimization route of the vehicle based on the state of the charge? How can you design a network of building the charging infra? How can you solve for financing and insurance data? That entire thing will be based on the whole machine learning and the AI part of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So are you doing routing yourself, or is the routing done by the customer?
So since we are currently working with all the top brands, so they already have their own routing and search scheduling bits, right? But what's also happening actually is that a lot of D2C brands are coming up, right? So far, we are not focused on that. But then they say, not many biryani companies are coming. Not many digital companies are coming, right? They are good in terms of making a good product. And they are creating a mechanism where you can order the product from the website or the app. And then they are responsible for delivery of that product to the customer. That is the part they don't know. Hence, they put all these things to Amazon or else. What we are telling them is we will give you a solution that after the booking is made to the website, it automatically flows through our server through API integration. From that part to delivery part, we will do it. We will take the entire thing for you. You focus on making the best biryani. You focus on making the best pizza. How the pizza gets delivered, how the biryani gets delivered, or whatever you're making, right, gets delivered, we will take the entire responsibility into it for ourselves. So we are building that capability. That product is yet not out, but the whole idea is we want to reduce the friction of our customers to switch to electric as much as possible.
What do you think is the role of government in helping you reach the 1 billion top line target that you have?
That's a huge thing, right? For the last 2-3 years, central government has come up with FAME II policy, which talks about giving subsidy of 10,000 crores to the segment. And we are already a beneficiary. Whenever we purchase a new vehicle, we are getting the FAME II subsidy for us. On top of that, there are states like Delhi government and Maharashtra government who are giving, on top of that, fiscal incentives. But more important, they are giving non-fiscal incentives by giving a mandate to the aggregators to switch to electric. Now, Delhi government has come up with saying that by March 2023, 25% of the aggregator fleet should be electric.
That aggregator means the flyover.
And so, aggregator means anyone who is using an app that ensures a people or a product gets delivered from point A to point B. If you integrate that, it means it's Ola, Uber, Zomato, Swiggy, Domino's, Pizza, any app. But what Zomato does? Zomato ensures a product gets delivered from point A to point B.
Yeah. Or even like say portal.
Portal for sure. So all this has to abide by this, right? Now, when you have so much of supply constraint, so much of expertise missing in the sector, and government puts a mandate, it will speed up the process. Because so far, at least some of them have been lingered, like Flipkart, Amazon. We'll see where it comes to it. So we want to do that government push on the mandate front is going to be a big enabler. And the subsidy they're providing, on the charging infra, they're providing subsidy. They are allowing the electric vehicles to enter into the special zone where a typical diesel vehicle is not allowed. These are all small things that matter. And it creates a barrier for ICE vehicle to operate in a seamless manner as compared to electric vehicles. I think the way Delhi government is pushing, the Maharashtra government is pushing, Telangana is pushing, we see that these are the states who will lead the EV adoption. And the good part is that we are already present in these states. So we are already a beneficiaries. And will continue to be beneficiaries for a scale up for that. So we want to continue the momentum from a government perspective that all the central government and the state government focus should be on electrification, and that is required for next 5 years to further accelerate the adoption in the country.
If you like the Founder Thesis podcast, then do check out our other shows on subjects like marketing, technology, career advice, books, and drama. Visit thepodium.in, that is thepodium.in, for a complete list of all our shows.
Before we end the episode, I want to share a bit about my journey as a podcaster. I started podcasting in 2020, and in the last 2 years, I've had the opportunity to interview more than 250 founders who are shaping India's future across sectors. If you also want to speak to the best minds in your field and build an enviable network, then you must consider becoming a podcaster. And the first step to becoming a podcaster starts with Zencastr, which takes care of all the nuts and bolts of podcasting, from remote recording to editing to distribution and finally monetization. If you're planning to check out the platform, then please show your support for the Founder Thesis podcast by using this link, zen.ai/founderthesis. That's zen.ai/founderthesis.